Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We're here with a very, very special guest. Brandon's done a lot of amazing things. He's worked with a lot of amazing people. So I'm just going to open up here, let you introduce yourself and talk all about you.
Lovely. Oh, God, I knew to introduce him myself. I'm just used to you usually asking the questions. I hate introducing myself. I mean, I've done so many different things.
Well, that's no problem. We'll just start from the beginning here. What got you into the paranormal?
Obama. Actually, I was a director at a management consulting firm. Had 255 employees, et cetera, et cetera. And the recession hit, and my 86-year-old firm shut its doors. And so while I was on unemployment, I actually was watching the Ghost Hunter shows, and I kind of reflected back to things I had witnessed and saw throughout the years that I kind of shrugged off and just said it was my imagination and kind of wondered, I wonder if there is something to it. So I ended up actually joining a team, and my first investigation, I caught what a lot of people deem as a holy grail shot. I caught a little boy in a picture, and he's actually in four books. And I also caught an EVP that day that said, leave this place. I was at Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, the most haunted cemetery in the United States. And from that moment, I was hooked. And it really hasn't stopped.
After you did the first investigation, you've went to some pretty amazing places from what I've researched on you. So let's talk about those places a little bit.
I mean, geez, it's hard to believe. Even though I retired for 2.5 years during my late wife's battle with cancer, it's hard to believe that in 2018, I'll actually be celebrating my 400th investigation. I mean, I've been blessed. I mean, I've been all over the country. I've seen some amazing locations. I've met amazing people. This is what a lot of investigators dream about doing, and I'm living it.
Yeah, so let's talk about a couple of those investigations, and we'll get into some of the people that you've met and what you're planning to do in the future, a little bit about your business and what you do now, and kind of just kind of roll with it, I guess we could say, because there's a lot of things I could cover with you. I think it took maybe we talked about a week and a half ago, and I think it took me all of that just to look through the research on you. You've been mentioned in books. Like you said, some of your photos have been put into several books and several magazines. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things to cover. But let's start with some of the places that you went. What's one of the most exciting or interesting places that you've actually visited where you got some activity and you're like, wow, I've got to come back here?
Well, I mean, it's no hidden secret. Bachelor's Grove Cemetery is my favorite location. And Old South Pittsburgh Hospital is my second favorite location in the country. And I'm blessed that it's right here in the state that I live in, Tennessee. I mean, that place is just off the charts. God, I've seen apparitions. I've seen doors open, door handles jiggling, things thrown. I mean, I've seen so many different things at that hospital. It's crazy.
Well, Tennessee's got a lot of amazing little haunted locations, some of them well-known, some of them not as well-known, but I spent 2 years in Nashville, Tennessee, and Nashville alone has some interesting places that most people don't know about, but outside of the just the whole state is amazing, I guess you could say.
Well, I mean, the state, what a lot of people don't realize is when you think about the Civil War, Tennessee was the second most battled. There were 29 battles here in the state of Tennessee. So there's a rich history Civil War activity, not to mention Native Americans, slaves. I mean, the list just goes on, you know, and not to mention, you know, a lot of, because this is the South, you know, a lot of bodies were buried all over the place, if that makes sense. Unlike, you know, Chicago, you have designated areas for cemeteries. I mean, for generations, people were burying people in their backyards, et cetera, you know. It's just a crazy state, not to mention all the water that you have in the state of Tennessee. I mean, there are underground springs, there's rivers, there's creeks, you have limestone, you have crystals. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on about the state of Tennessee.
Well, the Southern history, like you said, is very rich anyway. When you get to Tennessee and you get to Georgia, it falls here in Ohio a little bit. Once you start to get to Northern Ohio, it starts to disappear. But I've been lucky enough to be raised in Southern Ohio, Nashville, Birmingham, Alabama, and a lot of other areas that I've been able to go to. And when, like you said, when you get to the South early on and here in the southern area of Ohio all the way through to Tennessee, you find a lot of personal – a lot of them have been lost. You just kind of run across them when you're walking around in the fields. There's family burial grounds everywhere.
Yep. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, tomorrow night I'm going to be out scoping several cemeteries tomorrow night, and I'm sure a bunch of them will be farmer cemeteries as well. Someone's taking me out to look at some cemeteries for my team, you know, and it's just amazing. For some reason, I'm drawn to cemeteries. I always have been, and, you know, I can be on the highway and I'll just sense that there's a farmer's cemetery or a cemetery, and I'll look over, and there's one up on a hill. It's just crazy. And, you know, there's so many farmer's cemeteries in Tennessee and family plot cemeteries. I mean, it's just endless cemeteries.
Let's actually talk a little bit about cemeteries, because I know you've ran across this in the many years, because in the 15 years I've been tagging along with investigators, I've heard it a lot. A lot of people say you don't get a lot of activity out of cemeteries. It's always up for discussion and debate, but I've noticed there are some you do and some you don't. So it just depends a lot of times. I mean, what are your opinions on that? How often do you get activity when you're walking around these cemeteries, EVPs, action, unusual things?
Well, I actually have a theory on cemeteries, honestly. I'm not saying they're all active. However, you know, when we use spirit boxes, spirits will talk to us. But generally, if you truly listen, they're actually talking amongst themselves. And you can hear conversations going on where they're talking to one another. What that tells me, even in depth, that they're social. So my belief is that they return to some of these cemeteries for socialization, and that's why we see the meter hits. That's why we get the EVPs. I'm not saying every cemetery is haunted, don't get me wrong, or has activity. But from what I have gathered, that theory kind of makes sense. I actually tested the theory. I wanted to know if animals were the same way. So I actually did two pet cemeteries. Those were the worst investigations I've ever done in my life. Because with a human spirit, there's so many questions you can ask. With a dog or a cat, there's only so many things you can say. And I did them for 7-8 hours, two locations. And my final conclusion was animals do not return to pet cemeteries. But I do believe that spirits come back, to the cemetery for socialization, and that's why we do see activity at them. You know, I know a lot of investigators in this field believe that cemeteries should only be used for training purposes. I don't believe that. The bottom line is we're here to gather evidence and document as much evidence as we can. Why wouldn't we go to a cemetery? You know, that's our job. That's our responsibility.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that a little bit, and part of what you're saying does make sense and could also be a real reason why sometimes they're active and sometimes they're not. I've heard a theory that floats around quite a lot, and that is ghosts don't generally stay in one place in certain situations. So if you're able to travel all over the place and you want to speak to somebody, if you're in an area where the living aren't paying attention to you and you can't react to them, why not go to a cemetery and see if somebody's there that'll talk to you?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, let's face it, the United States is not like Europe. Don't get me wrong, the United States used to be that way in the old days. They would go to these cemeteries every weekend. They'd have picnics, and they would hang out with their loved ones. They don't do that really anymore. When you think about it, you know, people generally don't visit loved ones, what, maybe once a year, if that, you know. So they kind of have only themselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So. And you would seek out other people or try to seek out other people to communicate with if those things you're seeing around you aren't communicating back. So to me, it would make sense that, well, once you start realizing something different is going on and, well, hey, maybe I'm dead, you'd want to go to places where you know other people were dead, if that makes sense, because maybe you'll be able to find somebody like yourself. So it makes perfect sense. I know in other countries, I have several friends that are in China and Japan that are British and American, and they go to cemeteries all the time. They say the cemeteries are incredibly active. It's just kind of a belief here in the United States, if that makes sense, that people don't go to cemeteries a lot because they feel they're not active and that the dead won't be there. But I do tend to agree with you.
I disagree.
Why wouldn't they be there?
I disagree with that. You know, that's a false statement. I'm not sitting here stating that every cemetery is active, but there are a lot of cemeteries that are active, and they're just neglected, honestly. You know, people think that they have to go to these known locations. The bottom line is, oh, geez, I don't want to throw out names because I don't want to piss people off. But, you know, you go to some of these bigger locations, and the spirits don't really want to interact with you because hundreds of people come through there throughout the week, and they're asking the same questions. And you know, if I was dead, I'd be sick of it. Oh, God, here's some more of them. I'm out of here, or I'm not going to say a word. But now you go to a cemetery where they're not visited, they tend to be active because they appreciate the interaction, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I being a person that's tagged along with a lot of places and been in a lot of the major places, I tend to agree with you there too. I mean, there's been several big places, and I won't mention the places obviously because I know some of the people that own them, just like yourself and everybody else.
Yeah.
But you can go there and get absolutely nothing. And
yeah,
part of that
barely anything. You know?
Yeah, or
and
barely
and it's a shame because some of these locations back in the day, oh my God, I could just imagine what it used to be like. But unfortunately, hundreds of people, if not thousands, a month come through there, and, you know, I wouldn't want to talk to someone if I keep hearing the same questions over and over and over and over and over again, you know?
Yeah, no, that would make perfect sense. I mean, you're hearing the same questions, you're seeing the same equipment, you're seeing the same people doing the same thing, the same way.
Well, now I will say this. There is an app out there that has children's voices, and I utilize this app all the time because I know children are not at these locations. So I utilize it as a trigger object, and I get pretty good results at these big locations generally where you don't get a lot of activity because the adults are asking the questions. So knock on wood, it's been helping pretty good.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have even thought of that. That's kind of a good idea. You know, I mean, why not? Why not use a children's voice and some children's applications and see if you can get a reaction? Because you would think as an adult, if you heard a child, you're going to be prone to react to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's something different, you know. It's like some of these teams, obviously I have the past family, 101 teams across the country, and, you know, some of these teams are all female. Some of these teams are all males. And you know, you need both, really, because the spirits are going to act differently to a male. Spirits are going to act different to a female. Well, now here's a child, and they're going to definitely act differently. So, you know, it's just thinking outside of the box.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. In fact, we were thinking on our end in my research team doing a bit of a test on that situation just to have more data on it. Like you're saying, certain spirits will react to females, certain spirits will react to males, and a lot of people keep an even team. So we were going to, you know, divide that and just collect the data and research. Okay, we'll put some females in the location, then we'll take them out and put some males into the location and just collect the data and prove that, yeah, you got to have kind of an even sort here.
Yeah, you do. You do. I mean, there's different, you know, in this field, let's face it, the majority is female. But you do need some males, obviously. You know, a prime example is I was at Mansfield Reformatory, and I was in death row. And I just happened to come up with an idea. And thank God I was with all women at the time. And so I put each of the girls in front of the cells, and one by one, they were being touched. And if I had been with males, that wouldn't have happened, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe, but anyways.
Well, Mansfield Reformatory is actually a very interesting place anyway, and I could see where when you get to death row, especially because most of those guys were isolated the whole time they were there, that they would be interested in a female more than a male because all their interaction when they had a chance was just with another male.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, there's pros and there's cons of all male, all female, or a mix. And getting back to where I was going with this, and then I utilize that EVP app that has the children. I mean, there's just different techniques, different styles, you know. You got to think outside of the box.
Well, that's actually a good thing to bring up. Listeners, so that you know, when you're in paranormal investigation, and you've heard this from me thousands of times, Brandon will agree, there's no real rule book to this. There's not a step-by-step process, though all investigators do some of the same things and go through some of the same process. Most of the people out there had to learn how to do this, so you always have to – you can't just do the same thing over and over again. You always have to think outside the box. You have to let's try something new. Hey. It might work. And a lot of times it does. A lot of times it doesn't. But when it does, you get that hit that goes, man, this is cool. So
and
let's talk
no,
a little
no,
bit.
No right way or wrong way? Zach is wrong? No, I'm just kidding. I had to do it.
I think a lot of the TV shows – people mimic – well, you know this. People mimic the TV shows. They see how it's done there, so they assume that's the only thing you can do. But real research is – it goes more in depth than that. You gotta try unique things and just see if it happens. Every investigator I've ever had on the show has always came up with something like your child app. I've had people talk about using spinners. I've had people talk about using other objects. You know, just these little unique things that they've tried on their own because you have to experiment.
Well, I'm a trigger investigator, and what I mean by that is I take the location that I'm at and I think about the history about what went on in the location, and I will try to mimic it as much as I possibly can. You know, there's a TB hospital in Arkansas. It's hidden to the public for the most part. It is off the charts. But anyways, so I shut all the doors and kept rolling a gurney up and down the hallway because that's what they would have done when someone died. And as a result, we ended up getting activity. You know, I was down at the mental hospital down in Florida, And I started mimicking being a crazy person out of my room. And the place just went nuts. You know, if it's Civil War, I'm playing Civil War music. At Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, I utilize YouTube, and I'll play EKG sound effects. I mean, it's all about trigger for me.
Well, trigger effects work really well, I've noticed from observation and even doing it myself. You know, if you're in a location where you use a trigger effect and something from that generation is there, it tends to react.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I do it on every investigation. It doesn't matter where I am. You know, it just you spark something from their past and their history, they're going to react.
I had a very unique gentleman that was in the UK, and he tried a trigger effect. He put on a uniform from the area that he was in because the guards during that period in time, well, they changed sides. They worked with one king, and then they went to another king somewhere along the line. But he wanted to kind of – because it was a prison, he wanted to kind of use the guard outfit to see if he could get a reaction. Now, he thought that the reaction was going to come from the prisoners. However, the reaction that he got on the EVP and the ghost box at the time, because he was playing it live and I actually heard this, so we had to decipher it, was an old English language that basically meant, hey, you have the wrong symbol on. and it was amazing because it was caught right when he put it on. He put it on and went walking around, and he said, I feel something in the room. And then we caught this right off the bat. You could hear it. He put it on Facebook. We played it back, had to look into a dictionary for it because it was really old language. And basically it meant you have the wrong symbol on your vest. And that was really cool.
Now, like Waverly Hills, you know, I'll play coughing and wheezing sounds. You know, I just really take an account of the location that I'm at and what the history may have been, what happened at it, you know, to playing certain kind of music, you know. I've been at a Jewish cemetery and I play Jewish music and you know, we got activity. It's just, again, as a paranormal investigator, you must be thinking out of the box at all times.
Oh, no,
and unfortunately, a lot of investigators just go in with one mindset, you know, and they may get some activity, but they could have gotten so much more if they just fought outside of the box the whole entire time.
Yeah, repeating the same process repetitively, it may sound good and you get used to that motion, but I've noticed that. Yeah, you get a handful of things here and there, but if you repeat the same things, I tagged along with the team for about a year and a half because that's my job, you know, interview people like yourself, find out how this works, educate people, and keep repeating the process, and hopefully it gets out to America and they learn. But they did the same thing over and over and over again, and I got to be honest with you. We all know, obviously, the paranormal can be boring. You have those times where you're doing 8 hours and you get absolutely nothing. But it sure seemed like that whole year they got virtually nothing.
Yeah, and now imagine if they had thought out of the box and did a lot more triggering. Who knows? I'm not saying that they would have gotten something for sure. But, you know, it's like these people, you know, they'll ask me, so what's your protocol? What do you do on every investigation? What? I don't have a protocol. I do to an extent, but, you know, as I'm at the location, I'm feeling it, I'm sensing it, and, you know, I'm generating ideas while I'm at the location, you know.
But once you're up and running, you're kind of getting a feel for things.
Yeah, you know, it's like being an architect, you know. Granted, they do their blueprints before they start building. The blueprints start designing in my head while I'm on the location. Okay, I'm going to try this. This might work. This might work. That might work. And you know, but if I stuck to a protocol, I'm shortchanging myself. You know?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. You got to try to experiment while you're out there. I mean, obviously, there's protocol coming in. You have to set up the equipment. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure you have everything. But once you're in there, things change so quickly when you're on an investigation.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, that's the first thing that I learned, especially with your if you're with a team. If you have inexperienced people on the team, then you not only have to deal with kind of the mass excitement and the, oh, my God, I caught a ghost when you may not have, but you also have to kind of experiment and be willing to try new things because it's the only way you're going to get something.
And I'm not saying my way's the right way. I learn stuff from people all the time, but I'm willing to try because I'm willing to think outside of the box. Again, I'm not there to just get a little evidence. I'm there to get the maximum evidence that I possibly can and get the maximum experience. You know, it doesn't matter if it's personal experiences. Yeah, we all love meter hits. I love the personal experiences. And if I did half the stuff that a lot of these teams do, I wouldn't get those personal experiences.
Well, personal experiences are a very big part of the paranormal, though, yes, we can't prove them. And so forth. We still, when you walk into a situation and you know you saw and heard something, especially when there were other people there that saw and heard the same thing, of course, obviously, you have to try to rule it out. So you're looking around trying to explain it. But if you can't explain that situation, it becomes very important. I mean, it's all a part of what you're doing.
Right. Well, I mean, the best way, analogy, you know, paranormal investigating is like a car, okay? And the meter hits are like gas. After so many meter hits, the tank starts getting empty. It's those personal experiences that fill that tank up again that gets you going, gets you driving, gets you further. So, like I said, I'm going to maximize the personal experiences. You know, there's times I don't even pull out of meter because I just want to have the personal experiences. I told you I'll be celebrating my 400th investigation. I've seen enough meter hits. I'm there for the personal, or you know, I can't prove them, but it keeps me going. It motivates me. Plus, I get the meter hits on top of it, which is nice. So I get a nice combination of the two: personal experiences, meter hits. I'm getting the best of both worlds, opposed to just getting the meter hits. The whole investigation. Boring.
I learned from hanging out with most investigators that have been in it for a while. There comes a time where a lot of people get to that point. It's great to get the evidence, but you know, the personal experience is what keeps you coming back. Uh-huh. And now a lot of people have debated this with me, but I look at it from both ends of the angle. I look at it from the personal experiences because I love to hear the stories, and I've had them myself. That's what got me involved. But personal experiences on a scientific end actually are important as well, because if you collect enough data from people and they all get the same reaction, the same thing, the same words, or something that corresponds – enough of that proves in itself that something's going on. But yeah, I'm a big one on personal experiences because I would say 99% of what I've had in the 20 years that I've been doing this are mostly personal stuff. I love the data. Don't get me wrong. I love to collect it. I love to keep track of it. I'm a scientist at heart, but personal experiences is what started me in this, and I enjoy it and fear it sometimes depending on the situation. But it's all a part of the process, so I can certainly understand that. Let's talk a little bit about your opinions on some of the technical stuff that we use.
Sure.
Because we use a lot of equipment. We use everything from EMF meters to EVP. Mm-hmm. There's ghost boxes. Like you said, you've used those in your travels. There's a lot of different things. So let's talk about your opinions on those. What do you think is worth using? What do you think is most commonly misunderstood? And kind of run with it, I guess you could say.
Let's see, EMF. I'll always be a millimeter fan. I love the millimeter. I think it's an extremely accurate piece of equipment. It's not sensitive like a K2 or a ghost meter. So from the EMF standpoint, I would go with the millimeter. I use a lot of Paranology's equipment. I endorse them. I love the Periscope 360, which detects static electricity. I've had a lot of good results with the Periscope 360. As a matter of fact, two weekends ago, I was up at Octagon Hall up in Kentucky, and I think it was 29 degrees. It may have been 30, but anyways, to sit there and watch the Periscope 360 going off outside just blew my mind. I didn't think it would work because it was so cold. And, you know, there's not static electricity outside. And to see that thing go off, I believe it was 4 times, just blew my mind. I love that piece of equipment. I tested it for a year. I finally bought one. So I'm a big fan of the Periscope 360. Paranology's also has another piece of equipment called Temperscope. And what it does is it lights up blue when it detects a cold spot, or it lights up red when it detects a rise in temperature. Granted, these are visual pieces of equipment, which I like, because, you know, I'm not sitting there staring per se at a millimeter that's constantly lit up. These pieces of equipment are off. You know what I'm saying? Which allows me to focus on the personal experiences, if that makes sense. Paranology has their GeoPod. I really like that, and that detects footsteps, thumps, whatever. I'm pretty old school. I'm about to get the Flare. I want to start using that. That's really sparked my interest. Spirit boxes, I am a fan of the spirit boxes, not all of them. But I'm looking at the SB11. I've been pretty impressed with that piece of equipment because of the fact that it has forward and reverse sweeps at the same time. I think that's very interesting and kind of throws out what people used to say, that it was just jibber jabber in between the radio stations. Well, if you have one going forward, one going backwards, you're not really going to get that jibber jabber. You know what I'm saying?
It's less likely. Yeah, it's less likely that you're going to pick up solid sound when you're doing both at the same time, sweeping forward and backward. That is what is unique about the SB11. I'm a big one that, you know, I question a lot of ghost boxes, but I've seen some unique results on that mm-hmm. I can't explain. I can't break
Absolutely.
It down.
So, I mean, I personally had a Joe's box. Unfortunately, I sold mine when I retired because I did not think I would be returning to the field. There's not a day that I don't kick myself for doing it. There are only 2 Joe boxes out there that I know of, and I think they're over $2,000 each. So I'm looking at the SB11.
The static thing is very interesting. That what you mentioned there earlier, that actually is good collected data, because like you said, in cold weather, there really shouldn't be much static electricity.
You go into Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, there's not carpet on most of the floors. That thing should not be going off. If there was carpet, yeah, I'd be a little skeptical because of the static electricity of the rubbing of the feet, you know?
So. Yeah, it's just interesting because the more data you collect that way, the more you can say that's a unique anomaly. If you've got a temperature gauge sitting over here stating that this is very cold weather, and then you've still got static electricity over here. You combine the two together, it just doesn't make sense. So that's a really interesting thing. A little bit of a break. You're listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations. They've been around for quite a number of years. If you're thinking about starting a digital radio show or podcast, go with BBS. Don't forget to go with the best. A little side note, I have a friend of mine. His name is Carl. He started a group called Shades on Facebook. He's trying to boost that up a little bit. So if you're really interested in getting into more in-depth talks about the paranormal, because it gets really deep, don't forget to jump on Facebook and look up his group. He's an amazing gentleman, got a lot of research. He's talking about a lot of unique things. On other notes, Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown, Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell actually are running their show on Amazon right now. It's a very unique, unscripted show, so don't be afraid to take a look at it. Wonderful people, great individuals. On a side note, we will be doing a documentary here in the next 3 years about the paranormal. It's going to cover a lot of different things from a very unique aspect, bringing in a lot of paranormal experiences and a lot of seasoned paranormal investigators to discuss their situations in a point of view that needs to be done in the paranormal. It's going to be called Generation Truth. As this grows, I encourage you to take a look at it. And investigators, if you're actually out there listening right now, I encourage you to call me. We'll be more than glad to bring you as a part of this. The goal is to give back to the paranormal community. As we all know out there, there's a lot of different things that go on and a lot of things that every investigator, after they hit that 20-year marker, just kind of slap their head and go, oh, my God. When in reality is, when we work together, we all tend to agree on certain things and we all like to experiment, like you're noticing here today. And that's what this documentary is about. It's about all of you. So by all means, contact me while this is growing, while you see some of the clips and so forth, and talk to me about it. We'd be glad to have you on the show. We'd be glad to interview you. I'd be glad to have you on here. You've been listening to Brandon. Brandon has 400 and some, actually, investigations behind his belt. He's a wonderful gentleman. We're going to be continuing with that. Brandon, let's talk about some of the people you've met along your journeys. I know that you've talked to a lot of the people I've had on the shows. They speak very, very highly of you, and you've been to a lot of locations with them. So what teams have you been along with, and what have you guys done that's kind of unique that you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I have the Past family, and the Past family, as I said, is 101 teams. So I've worked with a lot of teams. You just mentioned Paula and Gavin, and what is that? I always forget the name of the show. Paranormal Journey into the Unknown. I'm on two of the episodes of that. That was interesting, doing that with them. We actually did Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, and we did the Jailhouse Pizzeria in Kentucky. It was interesting filming with them. Who else have I worked with? Gosh, I've worked with so many people. I mean, I've worked with the Bluth Brothers. I've worked with Keith Age, John Brightman. I've investigated with Joe Chin. I mean, the list, Dustin Perry. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. Like I said, I've just been truly blessed to work with a lot of amazing people. I think the most amazing people are the people that are within my past family, honestly.
Well, that's a good thing to express, and you spend a lot of time with teammates, and when you do that, they become your family.
The Past family is a unique family. A lot of people refer to us as the Paranormal Mafia. It's extremely hard to get into the Past family. The Past family, since 2010, we've only had to remove 5 teams ever from our family. That's how close we are. That's how tight we are. We mourn together. We pray together. We celebrate together. We work together. We question each other. We ask for advice. It is such a close, tight-knit family. It is para-unity at its finest, and I couldn't be more prouder of being the founder and the president of this family and we're almost up to 400 members.
That's an amazing thing. I love what you said there, because that's a debate all across the paranormal community, the word para-unity.
It's a joke. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke, and that's why I can proudly say the Past family has no drama. We do. We are a family, and we all have the mentality, the attitude, you mess with one of us, you mess with us all. And we're just that tight, and that's how it's always been, and it will always continue to be that way, because as I bring in teams to these teams into the family, which, granted, they go through my director of recruitment, they go through my recruiter, but I have the final say. And when I do the phone interview, to steal Al Pacino's line from the recruiter, I am just a scary judge of character. I know if they're going to be a fit for the family. And as I tell every founder that I do bring into this family, when I bring you in, you and your teammates become almost blood family to me. And that's how I look at it. And that's how we look at one another. And that's why we have absolute 100% para unity with inside the Past family.
Well, that's something that I think when you start discussing it on a mass scale across the world, people assume para unity means that everybody has to agree and everybody has to, you know, get along and say the same thing. Well,
no.
Real families, you know, real families don't do that.
No, absolutely. I mean, as you know, when I'm interviewing a founder, I let them know, you know, there is no discrimination within this family. You know, we have blacks, we have whites, we have Hispanics, we have Orientals, we have atheists, we have Wiccans, we have Buddhists. I don't think we have any Satan worshipers, not that I know of. But anyways, there is no, there's just no discrimination, you know, and it's just the right way of doing things. And it's what's so beautiful. People say it all the time. How do you run such a big family? These are professional people. I don't have to micromanage the Past family, because they're all acting in a professional manner, working with one another, not sitting there bickering and fighting like you see across this whole entire field. We don't have that in the Past family. And that is what's so unique and awesome about this family. And again, I can't emphasize it enough. It is an honor. It is an absolute privilege to have every single one of the almost 400 members in this family. Because myself, people have looked at me over the years like I'm stuck up. Generally, I do not work with non-Past family teams. I surround myself with people that I trust and I can count on.
That's a key when you're doing paranormal investigations, though. You have to be able to trust your team members. You have to know that they're out there to support you.
Mm-hmm.
And you yourself are out there to support them, because you're a team. And there's no I in team.
Ooh.
That's an amazing thing, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I'm a big one on all of the people that I've tagged along with, because I love to learn. I'm a big one on observing, and it does seem that there is a lot from time to time when you deal with the whole community, a lot of bickering, a lot of, you know, backstabbing and silly things, but every now and then, and most everybody I've had on the show are all a part of that. Every now and then you run across teams like yourself and the massive groups of people that you're involved with. And I'm sure I probably had several by now that are a part of your team that have been on the show, because I talk to so many people. Mm-hmm. You run across those people that it is about the professionalism. It's about what you're there to do. It's about talking about that, and it's about working together. And once you get past all that bickering, there's an amazing group of people that will be willing to share almost everything in a manner that's, well, yeah, I may not agree with you and you may not agree with me on certain subjects, but that's not what it's about, if that makes sense.
Right.
And I love that aspect of the paranormal.
Right. I mean, myself, I avoid all drama. I don't want anything to do with it. I dealt with it for years. I'm not doing it anymore. And you know, if that means surrounding myself with the past family, that's what I'm going to do. You know, granted, I do these public events and whatnot and work with non-past family, but that's the extent that I will go to. I have actually been invited to go on an investigation, and if I find out a team's on going on the investigation that's not past family, I pull out. You know, some people look at it as stuck up. That's my right. That's my choice. I've dealt with enough BS in this field that I'm not going to put myself ever in that position again.
There's a lot of it. I wish I couldn't say there wasn't, but there's a lot of it. I've seen my share myself, and I tend to do the same thing. I just tend to avoid the drama. There's no sense in it. You can hold yourself above it. It's about the research. It's about community. It's about talking about finding something. It's about sharing that data and that collection and being able to understand that no matter what my belief is, I tend to listen to everybody's beliefs, and I'll still study into those beliefs because I think the paranormal is an amazing place. You learn so much from people. let's talk about a little bit, because I know that we're winding down just a little bit here. Let's talk about a little bit about you know, where we can find you, what you're doing currently that you want to promote, and a little bit about your business side and so forth, so that the people know where to find you. Because I think you're an amazing man, and I think people should look into you, do some research, and meet your teams. And really, I mean, you guys are an amazing bunch of people. I could learn off of most everybody that you're connected with, I bet, because it's always a learning field.
Shit, I'm still learning from them all. I mean, that's one of the things that I enjoy doing is traveling and working with the different past family teams, because I learn new techniques, new styles, new pieces of equipment, you know, and then I go to the next team and I share what I've learned with them, and they show me something new, then I take it. It's an awesome thing. Where I can be found, at this point in time, well, my personal team is on Facebook, Past of Kentucky, Tennessee, and Illinois. My public page is Brandon Kreitzer, the Paranormal Road Warrior. Past Family public page is another Facebook page. I can also be found on www.bkts.online. That's the business side. My personal web page is on there as well, but that's my t-shirt company, and also Phoenix Rising. And that's where you wanted to go next. Phoenix Rising. Phoenix Rising Productions is basically a production company that hosts events around the country for the public. It is my way of meeting the obligation, or not obligation, the wants and needs of the public. Granted, I help the paranormal, this is my way of helping the public, allowing them to giving them the opportunity, the chance to actually do a real paranormal investigation. And, you know, pairing them up with professional people that will show them how to do it. Not saying that they always get activity, but pretty much most of the time they do because of the locations that I host these events at. I try to keep my prices reasonable, because that is one thing that I vowed when I opened Phoenix Rising, that I would not rape the public. And I, for the most part, I have done that and have kept my events in between the $30 to $70 range. Not these $99 ones, not these $150 ones. I've always stayed $70 or down.
Well, that's a good thing, actually. I think some of these places charge entirely too much, to be frankly upfront with you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I have a responsibility to the field with everything that I do, whether it's with the past family, God, the list just goes on, that I do for the paranormal community. Well, what about the public? And you know, Phoenix Rising's now been around 6-7 years, and it's meeting the public's wants and needs, because there are so many people that watch these shows and say, oh, I would do that. Well, they don't get the opportunity or the chance, or it's got awful high prices. Who wants to pay $150 for a ticket? I don't. So, you know, it's all about helping people. That's what this all boils down to. How can I help everyone that I possibly can? I can help the paranormal community by doing certain things for the paranormal community. I can help the clients that are in need with all my past family teams, which we take and we help thousands of families across the country. Well, now how can I help the public? How can I help the public experience what we do as investigators on an investigation? That's where Phoenix Rising comes in. Then there's my charities. What can I do for my charities? I mean, it's what it all boils down to, Chris. What goes through my mind each and every day is, how can I help everyone that I possibly can?
That's what makes you a very wonderful person, Brandon. I certainly appreciate you coming on the show. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality on BBS Radio. We've been listening to Brandon, and I apologize if I mispronounce this because I'm lousy with pronunciation. It's Kreitzer. Is that how you pronounce that?
Kreitzer.
Kreitzer. See, I'm always terrible with that. So, again, I certainly apologize. It's my one flaw. I suck at pronunciation. On BBS Radio, Brandon's a wonderful person. You're always welcome to come back. I know we could talk for many, many hours, but we're winding down to the last few minutes of the show. Next week, I have a paranormal team that's very unique that's going to be joining us if everything works out right. I do encourage you guys to listen to them. They're a wonderful bunch of people. They've been in the field for 23 years so far, and they've got some things that they're going to share with us. We're going to let you off of here because we're at the bottom of the hour now. But just as I end every show, as you noticed while we were talking with Brandon here, in the paranormal, the key is that the truth should always be the reality. You're going to meet a lot of different people. You're going to talk to a lot of different people if you're investigators. And if you're not and you're curious, most investigators are willing to discuss it with you. The one thing that I want to emphasize is, as you notice today, in the paranormal, there's a wonderful bunch of people. It's a great community. And like he just mentioned, a lot of times it's how they can help you. So don't be afraid to ask. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.